Next on our agenda, item T, court security, final report of the Court Emergency Response and Security Task Force. This is an action item.
The following participant enters the conference.
Emily Elias.
You just missed it.
Judge Heiberger.
So, Judge Elias, we approved item S, so Judge Heiberger will have new responsibilities, and he wanted to know. He wanted you to know that in case he might be otherwise using his time for statewide administration and policy.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. As I was saying, Mr. Mike Roddy, member of the Court Emergency Response and Security Task Force, is presenting. Welcome back, Mike.
Good morning, Chief Justice. How are you? Well, see, I think I've been back, so. And I feel like a bit like Captain Kirk reporting on the end of our five-year journey. Seek out new security life forms and new security civilizations. But I'm here today to report on the final report of the Court Emergency Response and Security Task Force. Chief Justice and members of the councils, Judicial Counsel, I'm Mike Roddy, the executive officer in San Diego, and a member of the task force as I come upon my 16th year of working on court security issues. Remember back in the day when I was in a different court talking about the costs and impacts of court security, and the former administrative director said, I think we have a task force for that. And with me today is Malcolm Franklin, who's the manager of the Office of Court Security here at the AOC. Malcolm. This task force, by the way, is chaired by Judge Fred Horn from the Orange County Superior Court, who could not be with us today. The task force was created in August of 2007 by Chief Justice Ronald George, and it essentially was put together, Malcolm, with two basic charges. The first was to evaluate court security, including emergency planning, continuity of operations, and personal security for judges and court staff. Second, it was charged with developing recommendations, and let's remember this was back in 2007 when security was a major part of the court budget. It was charged with developing recommendations for the council to manage, maintain, and enhance security in the courts through statewide systems and progressive initiatives to increase efficiency, effectiveness, and cost-saving measures here in California. So there's a clear direction to try and work on the rapidly escalating costs of court security within the branch budget. In the original charge, we were to report back to the council at 18 months, and we did so. And our final report was to be delivered to the council in 2010. But as I'll detail in just a moment, there were a few twists along the way that necessitated extensions first into December of 2011 and finally into June of this year. And ultimately, we come before you today with the culmination of over 5 years' worth of effort on behalf of the committee. As the task force began meeting, we formed two subcommittees, and we looked at, first of all, the first subcommittee was looking at threat assessments and emergency planning, both here at the state level and for individual trial courts to provide guidance, templates, and assistance in these areas. The second subcommittee that was established by the task force was to look at security standards, facility standards, education. And in the course of that work, there were numerous other advisory committees and groups that had been established, some internal to the branch, some included sheriffs, representatives of law enforcement, labor associations, and those kinds of things. And so the committee felt we needed to take a rather broad look at the issues involved in standards, guidelines, facilities issues, and so forth. We were looking at security for judicial officers in that subcommittee, security standards for court operations, perimeter screening, entrance requirements, holding cells, and those kinds of things. Security issues related to the facilities, design, layout, ways we could improve security for the safety for the public and for the judges, and then, of course, training and education. Now, all of this is detailed in your report, so I'm not going to spend too much time on that, but just to give you a broad overview of the committee's work. In June of 2009, the committee concluded that in order to most effectively deal with its work, that we needed the assistance of a judicial administration professionals who could advise us on the practices in other jurisdictions and across the country. And to perform this work, we contracted through the AOC with the National Center for State Courts. They have services and have done a tremendous amount of work with the federal courts and with numerous states and local courts on court security issues. We were looking at four areas of study back in 2009. We were looking at models for providing court security in an economical and efficient environment. We were looking at the development of threat and incident reporting systems. As we'll talk about in just a minute, California doesn't have a statewide threat and incident reporting system, and we're going to actually, that'll be part of the recommendations that we're making here today. The report was to look at standards and classifications for court staffing. You know, as we look across California, at one point there were over 23 different classifications of law enforcement personnel providing court security in the trial courts. And we were looking at methods for increasing trial court compliance with the statutory and rule requirements for the submission of court security plans. These were relatively new obligations for the courts, and we were looking at ways that other states might have addressed these issues. Well, here's the first twist that hit us. In 2011, as we were working with the National Center, there was a significant event that would seriously and dramatically impact the work of the task force. The governor proposed in 2011, as part of realignment and the shifting of funds between the state and the counties, that realignment would include court security funding. At that point, in 2011, the annual appropriation for court security within the branch was approximately $500 million a year. Two assembly bills were subsequently enacted and signed by the governor, which essentially realigned these dollars out of the court's budget, out of the branch budget, and back directly to the counties through a mechanism where the funds go directly into county coffers and directly into the budgets for the sheriffs. Although the realignment was not intended to affect the provision of court security services to the trial courts, in fact, it is a significant change. We have seen a significant change in that regard. Although PJs are still required to work in conjunction with their sheriff, or in the case of two counties, their marshal, to prepare court security plans, and the court is still required to enter into a memorandum of understanding, practically speaking, the shift lessened the Superior Court's leverage in negotiating cost and scope of services with the sheriffs. Secondly, with the changes brought about by realignment, the task force was concerned that maybe this had changed the nature of the report and recommendations we wanted to make to the council. So we asked for one of those extensions in order to evaluate that work. And the other outgrowth of the realignment was the fact that, from our perspective, this realignment may limit the role of the council and the superior courts in governing court security, and we wanted to better study that before coming to you with the final recommendations. Another turn in the road came with the SEC report and recommendations in that report for the restructuring of court security within the AOC. As we were completing our report in May of 2012, with the SEC report, the committee again felt it was important to step back and, first of all, comment on that report, and secondly, to determine whether the contents of the recommendations might alter our final report to the Judicial Council. In May of 2012, we submitted a letter to Justice Miller, Chair of the Executive and Planning Committee, and to the Council, where we suggested that contrary to the recommendations of the SEC report, which essentially looked to reduce, reassign, and refocus the functions of the Office of Security, that in the judgment of the task force, that we felt it was important that this function be maintained as an identifiable part of the Judicial Council agenda, that it required staff who have special training and expertise, and that these functions are best maintained in a separate office. So we have before you today, after nearly 5 years of work and a few twists along the way, in a very different court security environment than we had in 2007, the final report and five recommendations for council consideration. The first, of course, is that you receive the final report of the task force. The second is that you maintain the Office of Court Security, and we have detailed in our report, I think, a very detailed explanation of the need for that, maintaining that office. Number three, that we create a standing court security advisory committee to continue the work in this area, to oversee the Office of Security, and to report back to the Judicial Council on issues of concern, both to judges, to trial courts, court employees, and the public in this very important area. If the Council adopts those recommendations and we establish this advisory committee, we are recommending a charge for that committee. First, that they perform the duties and responsibilities identified in Rule 10.34, and I actually had to look that one up because I haven't seen that one in a while. And that's really the rule that establishes the duties and responsibilities for all advisory committees relative to the Council. Number two, that the task for the advisory committee be charged with reviewing and continuing to review the Office of Security and to make the appropriate recommendations in this area back to the Council. That we review options for threat and assessment reporting systems from a statewide perspective. We have a serious hole when we go to articulate to local and state authorities the impact on judges and court operations of threats and incidents because we have no database with which to compile across the state of California. Anecdotally, we know in my own court we had one yesterday. I mean, we've all heard we had an attorney who was slashed across the cheek and at the end, near the end of a rather lengthy, complex criminal trial. But we have no way of collecting, reporting on, disseminating best practices from a statewide perspective. And of many of the issues confronting the committee, this was one that we feel is very important. We've looked at models in other states that have such systems, and they've proven very effective at articulating branch-wide needs in this area. That the committee be charged with reviewing the usefulness of court security classifications and staffing guidelines in spite of the current situation where we see that court security is, frankly, no longer a direct part of the court's budgets. But an awful lot of work has gone into this area. We would hate to lose this effort. And if we ever come out of the other side of this and need to consider different models, we want to be prepared to address that. The other idea is that we may be able to work with courts and local sheriffs in that regard. And finally, that that the committee be charged with a process for working with courts to prepare and submit court security plans. And again, you may say, well, court security is no longer a direct part of the court. But we do think it's incumbent that the courts continue to work with their local security provider to maintain and implement and update security plans as conditions change, as needs change, as facilities change, so that we can ensure that we're providing safe facilities for our judges, our employees, and for the public. And that effort does take some work, but it becomes very helpful when you're looking at a situation like we had in our court yesterday, or heaven forbid we have a significant break in operations through some natural disaster or something of that sort. And five, our fifth recommendation to the Council is that we direct the Office of Security to continue, frankly, to educate judges and judicial branch staff about emergency planning tools, programs, and assistance. And that we direct the Security Office to develop emergency planning tools for the trial courts. Again, it's an area that can be supported by trained professionals who have security and law enforcement technique experience, and that often is either non-existent or difficult to obtain in the trial court level. Many courts turn to the Office of Security for consulting assistance, and we think that maintaining that infrastructure really would benefit the branch as we move forward in this area. And with that, I will stop and see if there are questions of the Council.
Any questions or comments? Mayor Beth Todd?
A quick question, Mike. Perhaps I missed it. Anywhere in the charge do you address the Office of Court Security's role in reviewing courthouse plans, designs, and plans? Because they have been very active in that, and I think that is a very important role, and they provide a great service there.
I think under the broad rubric of supporting local trial courts in their planning efforts, I think it would fall within that. But if we move forward with the advisory committee and keeping the office open, and I understand that's the next item on your council agenda as a recommendation in that regard, I think that would be very important to keep within the charge, because I agree they've been very important.
Yeah, I think there are probably promising practices and, you know, nationwide that the committee could be looking at, maybe even making recommendations and, you know, and how the Office of Court Security could continue to provide those services.
Well, even as, and I know as we're working on a facility as well, they're bringing the experiences from other buildings currently under design and development, even here in California.
Right.
So even in that very narrow focus of expertise with how to design holding cells and transportation patterns and, you know, what are the standards with respect to, you know, providing adequate holding, they've been very valuable.
Yeah. Thank you. Yes, Judge Jacobson.
Thank you. Do we have any estimate on what the cost would be to establishing a new standing security advisory committee?
We have not done that analysis, no.
Can I answer somewhat that? When E&P discussed item T, one of the concerns we had is that you had a number of recommendations. We wanted it to be understood that item T was just receiving your report. And then there are a number of other items in there which we need to deal with, one which is the standing committee. And as you can see, U is a separate item, which is retaining the AOC Office of Security. But the meeting that Rupro and E&P had yesterday and the review of the committees included this, and we're in that process and are going to meet again in January, and we will have Malcolm there to answer a lot of our questions. And one of those will be, if it fits within our core function, one of those will be whether or not what the costs are and if we have that availability and what type of committee we should ultimately recommend.
And I'm also interested in what are our alternatives to overseeing this other than a standing advisory committee.
That will be part of our discussion with Malcolm.
So can I, for clarification, they're still on the table today for council to consider all five recommendations, or is it just to receive the report and consider the other four?
We certainly could do those. Oh. I'm recommending that item T be limited to just receiving the report, and then U as a separate item, and then the standing committee will be something that we continue to deal with through Rupro and E&P's evaluation of all the committees.
So if I could make a motion, Chief, that would do just that. One, the motion is just to receive the final report of the task force and to hold off on the other recommendations for further consideration by E&P and Rupro as to whether or not there should be a standing committee or some sort of committee, and holding off on other directives until we get to you. But right now I would so move only to accept the final report.
Receive.
Second.
Second by Judge Kaufman, second by Judge Rosenberg, second by Judge Jacobson, and Judge Moss. Any further discussion or questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. Thank you, Mike. Thank you.
You make sure you thank Judge Horn.
Yes. We join in that.
And the committee members.
And Judge Brandlin as well, who's a member of the committee.
Thank you, Judge Brandlin.
Thank you.